Welcome to the new Cat Chat, brought to you by Dr. Elsie's, the wonderful private company owned by Dr. Elsie, a feline-only veterinarian whose personal mission is to formulate litters that keep cats using the litter box, which keeps them in their loving homes. I'm Tracy Hotchner, the author of The Cat Bible, Everything Your Cat Expects You to Know. My mission is to entertain, educate, and inspire cat lovers like you to give their kitty cats the best possible life in nutrition, affection, and environmental enrichment. With Dr. Elsie's support, the Cat Chat Show brings you interviews with cat authors and experts, some old favorites, some new conversations, so you can better understand and appreciate your own feline family members. Dr. Elsie's is also the founding and continuing sponsor of My Cat Film Festival, short films from around the world that celebrate kitty cats. Here's some exciting news. Thanks to Dr. Elsie's, you can now see streaming versions of the Cat Film Festival for free on Amazon Prime and Tubi TV. Hope you enjoy listening and watching. I am delighted to have Dr. Megan Herron here. She's the co-editor, as you already know from last week's show, if you've been following the new Cat Chats, of Decoding Your Cat. The ultimate experts explain common cat behaviors and reveal how to prevent or change unwanted ones. Dr. Herron, thank you for your wonderful work choosing so many great other behaviorist veterinarians to write chapters in this book. I can't imagine how hard it must have been, because you must have had to maybe not put in some of the great writing that's been done. Is that the case?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we were over budget for sure in our page allotment. And there's just so much great information we all wanted to share. Such a collaboration of mine.
Yes.
But I think we've got the cream of the crop right here in front of you.
I agree completely. And what I'd like to do week by week is break down Decoding Your Cat into its component chapters, each of which is a journey of its own into the feline wellness and mind and problems solving or problem preventing. So the feline dream home, creating an enriched environment for your cat's mind and body, written by Drs. Kelly Ballantyne and Amy Pike, starts with a wonderful example of a woman whose cat is miserable on many levels because the owner doesn't know any better. And I guess the overarching point of this chapter, which really is the overarching point of the whole book, is that if you don't recognize the things a cat needs, call it enriched environment, but we're talking about physical, mental, emotional, the cat is going to be stressed. Cats tend towards anxiety and stress by their very nature, being a prey as well as a predator animal. And I guess you as a behaviorist know that stress leads to behavior problems. So if you create an environment that's less stressful or perhaps stress-free or makes harmony internally for the cat, you have a cat without those problems. Is that a fair thing to say?
I'd say it's very fair. I think of an enrichment as something that allows an animal to do normal, natural behavior for which they are highly driven to perform.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And I think what we forget with cats is they are highly driven to do a lot of behaviors that are a real nuisance to human households if we don't provide them the appropriate outlet. So it's all about enrichment, not just for those needs, but really so that we as humans can feel like we can help cohabitate in harmony.
You said that really well, and I think it's an issue that I've never fully embraced. The cats are hardwired and driven to certain behaviors. It is in their DNA. It is in their wiring. So it's not a question of feline enrichment of their environment. It's just so much nicer. It makes life more pleasant for them. It's that if you deny those hardwired drives that the cat has, you're denying the cat its catness and its wellness. I think that it's really important to understand this is important as feeding correctly. It's fundamental to the cat's well-being.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, so we think about it with zoo and wildlife centers, right?
Yes, right.
Wild animals in captivity, and if we do not provide for their needs, we're going to see issues both physically, right? We have these fastidious breeding programs trying to get these species that are in danger to repopulate, and they can't because if their environment is not appropriate, then they're stressed and they aren't going to be fertile. Well, I look at cats as something similar, right? They are a domesticated species in theory, But as I often joke with my vet students, one of our first lectures, we talk about the domestication process of our of the animals that we treat. And you look at the wild ancestor of a cat, pretty darn similar to what your house cat looks like today. So
exactly.
Physically, not a lot of change. Behaviorally, not a lot of change either. So they still have a lot of those, you know, what we would consider sort of wild animal, normal, natural behaviors that, that have to be accounted for, just like you would a wild animal in captivity in, say, a zoo or a wildlife habitat.
Do you think, and I agree with you entirely, both nutritionally, that they're still obligate carnivores who should eat a basically meat diet, and the fact that hunting for prey is still one of the most important things that they can do. So in terms of a feline dream home, providing them with ways to express that hardwired behavior is essential, or they need to attack your ankles or another cat, or stress out in other ways quietly with their urinary tract system going haywire, even their upper respiratory system going haywire. I mean, I think that the book makes this clear in such a firm and quiet way. One of the, I'd love to dispel some of the myths that early in this chapter, the feline dream home, which I think it's very important that each of these chapters builds on wisdom and knowledge and studies that have proven it, so that when it comes around to saying, you know, your cat really needs playtime, we've already understood why in each chapter, whatever the advice is, because it comes from something really basic. So the idea of cats being independent, is that really true that cats can take care of themselves? You know, oh, the cat's fine outside. I love people who say, oh, the cat, my cat's really smart. He knows that's a car, the thing that just killed him at 60 miles an hour. He knew that was a car. Oh, he knew that other cat next.
He didn't know the car could kill him.
Right. He didn't know it could kill him. And oh, he's really smart. He stays out of the way except for oops. Or, you know, the cat next door that has a disease and then gives him an abscess from biting him. And then he's also got the disease. Or dogs that many dogs think killing a cat is as legitimate as killing a squirrel or a chipmunk or a rabbit or whatever they can get their little mouths on. I mean, these are terrible dangers to the cat, which if we didn't have them living in society with us, they wouldn't be exposed to them, but they are. So people that want an outdoor cat, not because it's a TNR situation of a feral cat that cannot bear living indoors, but just someone who thinks the cat's fine, leave him outside, put a dish out for him every so often, let him come in if he ever wants to. Is that something that behaviorists want people to understand is not in the cat's best interest?
Well, I think, as you said, cats, they are living in a human world, and that's going to come with dangers to them. And there is scientific evidence showing that cats that are living primarily outdoors are going to have a shorter lifespan than those that live indoors. I think what happens is that people with indoor cats who haven't maybe done their homework, they struggle to provide the needs. They struggle to provide the hunting opportunities,
yes,
the chewing. I mean, I always say, you know, hunting, scratching, chewing, and viewing. Those are the top things our cats need indoors, and it's a lot easier to get those when you're outside. But it
right.
also means exposure and acceptance of a heck of a lot more risk, as you mentioned. Hit by cars, danger from predators, danger from dogs, infectious disease, you know, frigid temperatures or
right.
high temperatures, right? I mean, there's so much risk where really the ideal world and the ideal wellness for your cat is a well-enriched indoor environment, or as we say, the feline dream home.
The feline dream home, as this chapter is called. But also another thing that it wasn't really said in that, call it the preface to the chapter, cats can take care of themselves. What I was a little surprised they didn't say, in addition to why outdoors isn't optimal for a cat anymore in most situations. If you live someplace where you have a barn and fields and the cat can get rodents and never go near a road and there are no predators, there's not a hawk looking for, you know, cat meat all day long, which in Vermont, these hawks are really, and in California, hawks and coyotes and so forth, think cats make a great snack. What surprised me
right.
is that I thought it was going to also say that to people who have their cat live indoors with them, but the whole book refers to this really, that if you think that cat's just fine being alone home with nothing but a nasty bowl of icky old kibble that's been sitting there and a nasty litter box that you clean once or twice a week, and the cat's fine. The cat's not fine. I mean, that whole idea that a cat can take care of himself inside the house doesn't require any of the various kinds of care and enrichment that this book is all about. Does that not worry you? I think that is such a common belief. People go away for a week even, never mind when they're at home.
Right.
They go away for a week and think the cat's okay. It's just, to me, it's a kind of ignorant cruelty that makes me cuckoo. Does it not bother you a lot too?
Oh, sure. I mean, the social needs of cat, and that's again what our book addresses, is a lot of these misconceptions,
right,
or myths.
Yes.
That cats are not social. They want to be alone. They don't need, right, they're low maintenance, and they're all myths, right? Cats,
yes,
are indeed very social. Just how social and with whom they are social may differ among individual cats, right?
Correct.
But they are indeed social. They are in cats living in a feral environment, they are huge groups. They are meant to live among each other. And if you're not providing, if they didn't get socialized to living with a lot of other cats, but got socialized to living with humans, then these humans have replaced their social network, and they need to have access to that social network regularly. So I would agree, leaving your cat alone without that, not just social time, but opportunities, as I said, hunting, scratching, chewing, and dealing.
yeah, and that's
it's takes a, two to tango. So
it's a good little checklist. But an example of why this book is so riveting to me, or anybody who really wants to drill down and deep into what makes cats who they are, is that very often studies are mentioned. These veterinary behaviorists mention other veterinary behaviorists or other researchers who've observed cats, not in a lab setting, but watch them carefully and thoughtfully and kept notes the way Jane Goodall used to do with chimpanzees. I mean, not dissimilar. And in the Feline Dream Home, the idea that cats don't care about human companionship, which you just mentioned. But what's interesting is there's a contact-seeking, I'm reading briefly from the book, a contact-seeking behavior after a prolonged absence, demonstrating the importance of human companionship. And then it shows something which I had only heard once about one kind of horse. I have never heard this about cats. Another study by Dr. Kristen Shreve and her colleagues found that when given a choice, most cats will choose social interaction with humans over food. That is something no person would believe. They think the cat's rubbing on your legs just to entice you or manipulate you into feeding them. I had only heard this thing about choosing human contact over food. I used to breed what I called American Warmbloods. It was a cross between English Shires, a cold-blooded horse, and thoroughbred mares. And the thing that was always said about Shires, their friendliness to people, is if you came out in the field and gave food, the Shires would come over to the people. They would rather visit with the people, check out the people. And I thought, wow, that's so special and different. Now it turns out that this is true of a cat. That a cat might love people so much, or be allowed to love people so much, that even if he's hungry and even likes what you're offering, he'd still rather say hi first. I was amazed by that. Did that surprise you?
Yeah, I think not for cats who've been well socialized to people, which I've, you know, personally have experienced that my entire life. It's not surprising at all that joy. I mean, there's so many hormones that bond us together and make us crave that affection, whether it's with each other or with animals, right? So oxytocin, one big one, right? And so if our cats are socialized to us and they bond with us, there is a chemical reaction, right? And essentially a chemical addiction to us. and I think the feeling's mutual for most of us who have and love our cats. So I don't actually find it that surprising for well-socialized cats that need, that craving for affection and social interaction is very strong and can be even stronger than food, which, as we talk about, is necessary for survival.
Yes, exactly. So just to finish up this segment, because there's so much more in the Feline Dream Home chapter, which we'll dig into week after week. The idea of a core space for a cat, or a safe space, I've often referred over the years on the show to cats need a vertical space, they need a place to get away from other cats, from children, from canines. But I've never fully understood the way this book, Decoding Your Cat, does. The studies that show that indoor cats, this was really interesting, a study by Dr. Sharon Kroll Davis, evaluated the habits of indoor cats. Most cats prefer to maintain a distance of at least 3 to 9 feet when they're within sight of another cat, even one they like and cohabitate with, and may spend as much as 50% of their time out of one another's sight. So the core space and the safe space, can you talk a little bit about that concept to finish up so that people understand that having snuggly areas for kitties or one cat tree where they could all be on the tree within a foot of each other is not really speaking to that hard wiring that requires space?
Yeah, sure. And I just want to give a quick shout out to Dr. Carl Davis. She is really the queen of some of these large group cat studies, because
yes.
She had, I spent some time at Georgia with her, and she had access to homes that really provided these giant sanctuaries to cats, where they really did it well and provided for all their needs. And they allowed her graduate students to just sit
no
there
kidding.
And watch.
Isn't that
yes,
something?
It's amazing. So this is real data. I have seen it myself.
Wow.
Really, there are people who have looked at multi-cat households, and we're not just talking 2 or 3 cats. We're talking about homes that can expand in the dozens, because they have the space and the plethora of options and
yes.
different core areas so that these cats can cohabitate harmoniously. And so we think of kind of 2 concepts. So a safe place or a safe haven is, that's my escape. That's where I want the choice to interact with my environment, or I need to have the choice to just take a break. And in that area needs to be all of their main resources, so that if they want to take a break for a while, they can use the litter box if they need to. They can eat. They can drink water. They can use a scratching post. They can sit on a cat tree on the periphery of a room and up high and do things outdoors. So where all of their needs are met, they have the ability to escape, and the child isn't able to get into that room. Or if there's intercat tension, maybe there's a microchip activated cat that only this cat can access. So it really depends on the individual family what's best for them. And then core areas is where, you know, if we look at the studies of feral cats, you'll notice that they don't have these defined, like strictly defined territories as much as we once thought they did. They have areas, sort of core areas that where they have all of their resources and their social areas. So we think of that when they're living in our home, if we have multiple cats, we want to have different options for everything that keeps them happy and safe. And again, litter boxes, perches, feeding stations, water stations. So if they have access to these things without having to interact with each other. And it isn't necessarily obvious, right? It could be that one cat says, I'm hungry. And they walk over to the food bowl and they see another cat is eating. Well, instead of challenging that cat and causing an issue, they can say, you know what? The other food bowl in my other core area is available. I'm just going to wander over there. It just makes things go so much more smoothly if they have options. Cats really like choice. And if we can give them multiple choices within a home, and it's not that complicated to do, it just requires a few corners here and there that are easy to get to for all the cats.
And the book explains that. It talks about living in a smaller home or in an apartment and the way that you can still provide. I guess what I had always known that cats generally don't want to share a litter box. There should be a litter box per cat, and they can't be banked right next to each other. The whole issue being, well, I need to be separate and feel safe when I'm going in the litter box and not feel like I could be attacked from behind or pushed out or someone just sitting there staring at me, which, you know, it's very hard mm-hmm. to pee when someone's staring at you. Even humans know that, right? So
right.
I guess what I never understood until this book is that while it's always been said you don't want the food/water bowls or feeding to be right near a litter box, because the two things are quite different activities, although they're linked on some level, that each cat's area for that should be quite separate from the others. So while I advocate only feeding wet food, which means 2 meals a day served on a saucer, not a bowl, so you don't smash their delicate whiskers, and not to ever free feed, and certainly not to feed kitty crack, which people who've listened to the show know that we mean that cats are obligate carnivores who don't do well with carbohydrates, certainly highly processed carbohydrates. So the idea that food is always available, cats not being a grazing animal, has never, in my information and knowledge, never been respectful of how a cat actually eats, which is find a mouse, eat the mouse, and then you get lucky if you find another one today. that food should be served, if you have more than one cat, in the same place at this more or less the same time every day. And that putting two bowls down in the kitchen, kind of near each other, even to cats who like each other, creates emotional stress, even if we don't see it. Is that what you came away from also or already knew? That to have that privacy of eating and littering and resting is really important and needs to be respected all the time?
Yes, I would say that's exactly it. Even for cats who like each other well, still giving them that space. And, you know, if needed, because that's what works for you, can be in the same room. We just recommend it be on the opposite side of that.
Right.
You're going to have exceptions to that rule. You may have very bonded litter mates that will go share off each other's bowl, even though they have the option.
Yes.
But the key word there is option. They have the choice. If they want to eat together, they eat together. And that you're carefully watching the body language. So
right.
The sharer is indeed okay with that.
Is welcome. Yeah.
It's always going to have exceptions. But in general, they want to have options. They want to have space so that they can just let their guard down and enjoy their food. No one wants to be stared at while they're eating, right? If you go, it always feels a little funny if you're the only one eating. I don't know why that is. If you go to a restaurant and you're,
it's horrible.
You know, you're not sitting at the bar, you're sitting at a table and everyone's looking at
you. Oh, it's awful. Or you imagine they are, even though they don't care. You think they're thinking, what am I, a widow? What, nobody likes me? I have no friends? What am I, a reckless?
Yeah, I don't want to be stared at.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
so cats the same way. Give them that option to just have privacy. Let your guard down. Not have to worry about what's going to happen. Are they going to try to play with me? Or are they going to try and intimidate me? I can just take a deep
relax
and enjoy my meal in peace.
Exactly. Well, we're going to wrap it up for today. But next week, we're going to continue with more from the Feline Dream Home. Cat food dispensers, or treat dispensers, as I would like to think of them, and the importance of these as a way to fulfill many of the cat's needs is what I'd love to talk about next week. Still in the Feline Dream Home chapter, one of many, many chapters in this marvelous book, Decoding Your Cat, which I can't wait to dig into more. Thank you so much, Dr. Megan Herron, and all of your colleagues, for this wonderful book and for spending time with us here today.
Oh, it's been an honor and a pleasure. Thanks.
Thank you for listening. I hope this conversation has deepened your understanding and affection for cats everywhere. It's been brought to you by Dr. Elsie's, which has broken new ground by creating a healthy, dry, and canned food for kitties called Clean Protein, which is inspired by the protein levels found in a cat's natural prey, so your cat's appetite is satisfied longer without compromising her health. This is the first dry cat food I believe can be a healthy choice if you want to feed dry food to your cat, even as part of her diet, although I recommend that canned food should always be your cat's primary diet. Feel free to reach out to me with questions or comments to radiopetlady@gmail.com. Now pop over to Amazon Prime or Tubi TV, where you can watch streaming versions of the Cat Film Festival for free. Also, thanks to Dr. Elsie's.